Thank you for listening to this sermon from Renaissance Church, located in Montreal, Quebec. For more information about Renaissance Church, please visit our website, renaissancemtl.com. If you would like to know more about how you can partner up to see the gospel advance in Montreal, please send us an email at renaissance.mtl@gmail.com.
Want to be extra sort of energetic today. I know we all lost an hour of sleep last night, but it'll pay off. We got an extra hour of daylight. This morning on the way to church, I told Savannah, my daughter, I said, please pray for me. You want to pray for me as I preach? And she said, dear God, help daddy to get coffee. Amen. So I got coffee. So I have coffee here. If you need coffee, we have coffee in the back. And hopefully I will not be boring this morning. We will get excited as we hear more in the book of Ruth, and it'll be very exciting. So it's our second week in this series on Ruth. So you guessed it, we'll be in Ruth chapter 2. And today we'll be introduced to a new character in the story named Boaz. We'll see how God uses Boaz to provide. And this chapter tells us much about the integrity and generosity that should be a mark of God's people. We see God's heart for the poor and the oppressed. We see God providing for those in need. We see that he is a friend to the poor, the widow, the foreigner, and the outcast. And Ruth 2 is really a beautiful, beautiful chapter. But before we jump right into that, I want to briefly review what we discussed last week. That's not only for those who might not have been here last week, but it also will just help get us into what we should be sort of looking for in chapter 2. The original author didn't split this up into chapters and verses, right? It's just one big story. So just so that we're all sort of on the same page looking into chapter 2, let's briefly review chapter 1. We talked about last week the idea that God still works even in the darkest times. The beginning of chapter 1 saw that this is set in the time of the judges, a time of darkness and evil and spiritual apostasy. If you read through the book of Judges, by the end of the book, the Israelites look just like the surrounding nations. They're worshiping other gods, right? There's passage after passage of them turning from God to other gods. They're committing heinous, just truly horrifying sins. The Levites, the people who should be sort of leading the people in the worship of the true God, they're turning people away, right? There we see even a specific story of a Levite becoming a personal priest to someone with wealth. And the final verse of Judges says, everyone did what was right in their own eyes. We briefly discussed how this looks a lot like our world today. Everyone doing what's right in their own eyes. Yes, we're separated by a few thousand years, and details might look different. We might not be setting up a shrine to Baal in our backyard or something like that. But the gist is the same. We are quick, and our world is quick to turn to other gods and do what's right in their own eyes. Thus, we also discussed the beauty of the book of Ruth, right? If Judges is a spiritual desert, Ruth is a spiritual oasis, right? We see, instead of people who are selfish, we see people who are selfless. We see people, instead of being mired in wickedness, them longing to act in truth and integrity and generosity. So throughout the sermon last week, we just narrated as well the story of chapter 1. The story centers on Naomi and Ruth. It begins with these Israelites, Naomi and Elimelech. They go to Moab with their sons, Mahlon and Chilion, because of a famine. While there, Mahlon and Chilion marry Moabite wives, which they really weren't supposed to do. Elimelech dies, and after 10 childless years, Mahlon and Chilion die as well. So Naomi, this Israelite woman in a foreign land, is left with her two foreign daughters-in-law, also widows, Ruth and Orpah. She hears that God has brought food to Israel, back to her people, so she says she's going to go back. But she urges Orpah and Ruth, says, stay where you are. If you come with me, it's only going to be hardship. It's only going to be difficulty. You're going to be a foreign widow in a new country. It's going to be difficult for you. Orpah turns back, and Ruth says, as we read in chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, she says, don't urge me to leave you or to return from following you. She says to Naomi, for where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death departs me from you. So we noted that Ruth, the Moabite, this foreigner, is the inverse of what we would see in Judges. In Judges, we see Israelites, the people of God, turning to false gods. And in Ruth, we see a Moabite turning to the true God. So chapter 1 ends, it says the city is stirred. They've returned, they haven't seen Naomi for a while, and things are not looking good for her, right? She left with a husband and two sons. She comes back with just Ruth. She says, "Don't even call me Naomi, call me Mara," which means bitter. "God has dealt bitterly with me. Times are tough." She returned with Ruth. She said, "God took me away full and has brought me back empty." So we stand at the end of chapter 1 looking at Naomi and Ruth. They're widows who've come to a new place. They have no husbands or children. In those days, without a family, without hope of progeny, a future, it'd be very difficult to find sort of sustenance, both in the short term and long term. So we end chapter 1 with two big needs, right? In the short term, they need to find food. They need to sustain themselves on a day-to-day basis. And long term, they need family. They need a support system, those around them, a family, a future line to be able to provide for their family. And in this chapter, we'll see God providing firsthand that short-term need of food and also laying the groundwork for filling their long-term needs. But one might end chapter 1 asking, how are they going to be provided for? Has God forgotten them? Has God dealt bitterly with Naomi, as she said? Is there hope? So let's read the first 7 verses of Ruth chapter 2 and start to get an idea. It says this: "Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. And Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, 'Let me go to the field and glean among the ears of grain after him in whose sight I shall find favor.' And she said to her, 'Go, my daughter.' So she set out and went and gleaned in the field after the reapers. And she happened to come to the part of the field that belonged to Boaz, who was of the clan of Elimelech. And behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem. And he said to the reapers, 'The Lord be with you.' And they answered, 'The Lord bless you.' Then Boaz said to his young man who was in charge of the reapers, 'Whose young woman is this?' And the servant who was in charge of the reapers answered, 'She is the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, "Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves after the reapers." So she came, and she has continued from early morning until now, except for a short rest." So these verses show us how God provides for the poor, the widow, the oppressed. In these verses, we're introduced to a new character in chapter 1, Boaz. He's related to Elimelech, making him a kinsman of Naomi. We're told that he's a worthy man. Some translations say he's a man of standing. Some might say mighty man. What does it mean? Well, first, he likely had some means. It probably meant he was wealthy. Obviously, we're about to see he has plenty of workers in a field. But it's also likely a connotation of his character. He's a noble person. Right? Some older translations say he's a man of noble character or a gentleman, right? Basically, this gives us the idea, this kinsman of Naomi, he has means, he has money, and he's also actually a kind and good person with integrity. So in verse 2, it's the beginning of barley harvest, and Ruth and Naomi need food. So Ruth asks Naomi if she can go out and glean in the field. Remember, she stayed with Naomi. She pledged herself to Naomi, knowing that it would likely be on her shoulders to help find sustenance for them, find food. And so now she's being true to that pledge. Ruth says she will now go out into the fields and glean. She will glean after the reapers. But what does that mean? Well, gleaning is an Old Testament practice that was set up by God in the law. It's described in Leviticus 19 and Deuteronomy 24. So in the law for the people of Israel, it says this, Leviticus 19, 9 and 10 say, "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap right up to its edge. Neither shall you gather the gleanings after your harvest. And you shall not strip your vineyard bare. Neither shall you gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and for the sojourner. For I am the Lord your God." Deuteronomy 24:19 repeats this command. When Moses is later retelling the law to a new generation, he says, "When you reap your harvest in your field and forget a sheaf in the field, you shall not go back and get it. It shall be for the sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hands." So gleaning was a practice instituted by God in order to make provision for those who are sojourning, so foreigners in a new land, for those who are orphans, for those who are widows. Ruth qualified on 2 accounts. She was a sojourner, a Moabite living among the people, and a widow. But it wasn't God's design in that day, nor is it God's design today among his people in the church, that any should be without food, without their basic provision. There's no doubt that life would be hard then as it is now for orphans and widows and foreigners. But a system was created so that they could gather food, right? If you're in Israel, you have a field, you don't sort of pick it bare, you don't go to the edges, you leave some so that those who are poor or widow or sojourning can come behind you and pick up what's left so that they have something to feed themselves. This is how God in the Old Testament makes it so that those who are, again, sojourning, the poor, the fatherless, the widow, how they can get food. There's a system in place. If you have the means, you're not supposed to just take it all for yourself, right? That's maybe how we think sometimes, is get as much as I can, I got to get mine, right? The law says no, leave some unharvested so that those come behind you who are poor can have something to eat. In the Old Testament law, God says to not go to the edges, but to leave some for those coming behind you. And it's amazing, too, that blessing comes from this, right? He says, if you do this, you will be blessed. We like to flip that, think, if I get as much as I can, then I'm blessed, right? But God says, if you do this, if you allow the sojourner, the widow, the poor to come behind and gather food, you will be blessed. And we see that example here in the life of Boaz. So the text of Ruth 2 and the character of Boaz now take on greater significance. As we'll see, Boaz allowed gleaning in his field, and it was clearly a part of the harvest on his land. Boaz was obeying the law. Here's a wealthy man in Israel, in the time of the judges, actually taking seriously the commands of God. Hallelujah. If you've read through the book of Judges, you realize this is rare, right? This is not what you would expect. This guy was actually doing what the law said, and he was blessed. He was provided for, right? God took care of him. He wasn't greedy. He obeyed the law, and he was faithful. And as we'll see, he was incredibly generous. So in verse 3, it says, Ruth happened to come upon the part of the field belonging to Boaz. He happened to come upon it, right? The Hebrew phrase is like a play on the words with chance, like chanced upon the chance or something. We might say she got lucky or that the stars aligned and she ended up in Boaz's field. I'm reminded of, any of you guys are familiar with like Hallmark Christmas movies. Has anybody watched those? It's okay. I find them annoying, but for the sake of my marriage, I usually watch a few around Christmas time. They're so predictable. It drives me insane, right? You watch one, you've seen them all. It's the same plot over and over. You know, you've probably heard all the jokes about them, right? But also, it just everything seems to happen so perfectly, right? They bump into each other at the perfect time, right? They're at the same, you know, community bake sale at the same exact hour, whatever it is, right? It always just works out. The timing is perfect. It just so happens that it all happens just right. And I think that never happens, right? Things don't ever work out that perfectly. Then I turn to Ruth 2, and well, maybe in God's providence, sometimes they do, right? We see this isn't just a chance thing, right? It's sort of almost a joke in the way that the Hebrew is, right? Like, we might say it's chance, but obviously God is appointing where they're to be, right? It isn't chance. She ends up in the field of Boaz by God's appointment. And in verse 4, guess who shows up? Right at the right time, Boaz. So she just so happens to be in his field, and then he arrives. Like, this is way better than a Hallmark movie. I mean, this is great. This is good stuff. So in verse 4, we get another look at the kind of man Boaz is. He greets his workers who are working in the field. These would be like his employees. And he says, the Lord be with you. Now think for a moment. If you go into work and your boss smiles and says, the Lord be with you. I suspect not all of us would just want to just turn back with a great smile and say, the Lord bless you, right? Honestly, we've all had bosses, right? That's not always the way we greet those who are over us, right? But we see his reapers blessing him. They return the favor. They say, the Lord bless you, right? Boaz is a good boss, and the workers in his field bless him. We're still at this point peeling back the layers of his character in the story, but so far it looks very positive. The people who work in his field all day, the people we might not blame for resenting him a little bit, they bless him. So he asks the foreman, the one in charge of this harvesting operation, whose young woman is this? Now notice he doesn't say, who is this woman? He says, whose is she? The phrase is a bit odd to us, right? Boaz would likely assume she's part of someone's clan or tribe. Maybe she's sojourning and her husband is there. But there probably weren't a lot of female sort of lone wolf gleaners who at least they didn't already know who their deceased husband was. If you're a widow, you would likely have been identified by your husband's clan. So then the foreman tells Boaz who she is. And again, the whole town, last chapter, was stirred when they arrived. So he doesn't have to give Boaz all the details. He says, this is Ruth the Moabite. Remember the one who came back with Naomi? And of course, Boaz would realize, oh, that's right. Yep, we remember her. This was a pretty big deal recently when they returned. The foreman tells him that Ruth asked to glean in the field and that she's worked from early morning until now with only a short rest. She is working very hard. She's taking her responsibility, her pledge to Naomi, very seriously. So at this point, we've been shown some of the character in this story already of Ruth and Boaz. Ruth, in the last chapter, demonstrated amazing loyalty as she turned to follow Naomi, going to Naomi's people, serving Naomi's God, the true God. Now we see that she was very hardworking. She's following through. She's doing very hard work. The work that was implied when Naomi told her, if you come with me, it's going to be difficult. But she did it. Likewise, Boaz is obviously a man of godly character, a worthy man, as it says. Those who worked under him blessed him. The way the text describes the gleaning that was going on in his field, it's clear that he took God's law and prescriptions seriously. He made sure that his wealth, his means, they were stewarded in a godly way. That in the promised land, as far as he could control it in his field, foreigners, widows, sojourners, orphans, they would be able to find food. We see here that God provides for the sojourner, for the poor, the orphan, and the widow. He provides a way for them to be fed. He provided for those in desperate need, and he still does that today. We've also seen here that Ruth is a godly woman and Boaz is a godly man. And we'll see this more in the next few verses. Let's look at verses 8 through 16. It says, then Boaz said to Ruth, now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the men not to touch you, the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner? But Boaz answered, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord and the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. Then she said, I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants. And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain. And she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean, Boaz instructed his young men, saying, let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And also pull out some of the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. So we see here Boaz and Ruth demonstrating godly character. Boaz opens this section by telling Ruth to stay in his field. Don't go somewhere else. Stay close to his female workers. He basically says, you don't need to go looking elsewhere. You can find security right here. And then in verse 9, he's also ordered the young men not to touch her and tells her she can get whatever she needs to drink. She was in a vulnerable position. She's a foreigner. She's a widow. So Boaz is offering security and protection. Stay in Boaz's field, and she'll be fed, secure, and protected. Frankly, for a young widow in a foreign land, this is a big deal. Look, this probably won't come as a surprise to any of you, but I've never been a young single woman in a foreign country. So I can't exactly relate to this perfectly, right? I've never been a widow. I don't know exactly what she was feeling. But it doesn't take too much. It's not too much of a stretch, and I'm sure there are some in this room who can relate, that in a situation like that, security, provision, these things would be very, very important. Finding protection, finding someone who's ordering his servants not to touch her, to let her get as much water as she needs, these would be important things for Ruth. As we'll see at the end of the chapter, these were also very important to Naomi, who was worried about Ruth. One can only imagine the insecurities, the anxieties, the fears that Ruth must have been feeling in this new place where she has to go and find food. We know it's a dark world. We know that so much evil is going on during this time, and for Ruth to be out there on her own is scary. She was warned by Naomi that there's going to be hardships and troubles, and she came back anyway. So this is a wonderful pronouncement by Boaz. He demonstrates amazing character, offering her security, protection, water. We see in verse 10, Ruth is incredibly grateful and also, frankly, a bit confused. She falls on her face. She bows to him. She has great humility and thankfulness. And she asks him, why are you doing this? It makes no worldly sense, right? I'm a foreigner. I'm a Moabite. Why would you notice me? And again, I won't rehearse all the stuff from the book of Judges, but it suffices to say that this action by Boaz is very out of character from what we would come to expect. Ruth can't believe it. Ruth wants to know why on earth Boaz has taken notice of her. And what does Boaz say? Well, does he say he's found favor because what? She's so attractive, or because, you know, what could build his brand having a Moabite in his entourage or something? No, he says, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to people that you did not know before. He goes on, the Lord repay you for what you've done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge. What caused Boaz to take notice of Ruth? It was her godly character. He heard all that she had done for Naomi. He heard about how she had forsaken her homeland to care for Naomi. He heard how she had taken refuge in the God of Israel. Why did Boaz notice this woman? He saw her upright character. And being a man of upright character, he sought to provide for her, protect her, and care for her. People have long, and I'm intentionally not going to go too much into this, but people have long found application throughout the book of Ruth to dating relationships and this sort of thing. And I mean, there are certainly application points here. They're not that hard to see, right? Godly people caring for one another, right? The big picture of Ruth is, right, God working in a dark time, but we do see highlighted in this chapter humility, generosity, and godliness in both Ruth and Boaz. Ruth responds in verse 13 by basically saying, look, I'm the lowest of the low. I'm not even worthy to be called one of your servants, but thank you. I found favor with you. If her initial question to him focused on her being a foreigner, right, how did you notice me, a Moabite? Now she's highlighting the sort of massive gulf in social standing. He's this wealthy landowner. She said, I'm not even worthy to be one of your servants. So then verse 14 picks up a bit later. It's now mealtime. And in this culture, in most ancient Near Eastern cultures, mealtime is where you really saw sort of social realities at play, right? You sat with people of your social class or your group. So at this time, Ruth, if she even was given sort of a lunch break, she likely was to sit alone, potentially with other outcasts. Maybe she didn't have much to eat or was by herself. We don't know, but it likely wouldn't have been good. But Boaz calls her over, and he has her eat with him and his workers, and he offers her the good food, right? She gets the roasted grain. She gets to dip her food in the wine, right? She ate until she was satisfied, and then she had some left over. So this woman was gleaning, right? I explained earlier the practice of gleaning. There's some leftovers, and you grab those, and it's a great way to provide for those in desperate need. Although there's not really many instances where we would expect someone who's gleaning to eat until they're satisfied and have left over, right? This is incredible generosity by Boaz. Then in a beautiful section, in verses 15 and 16, he goes even the extra mile. He instructs his male workers to let her glean even among the sheaves. In other words, she doesn't just have to stay around the edges. Let her glean and reap from the main field, among the good stuff. It says, and do not reproach her. A lot of translations say, do not embarrass her. I think from the commentaries I looked at, embarrass her might be even a better translation here. The idea being, right, let her gather among the good stuff and don't make her feel awkward. Don't make her feel guilty. Make sure she is comfortable. Don't question her. Be kind, right? He's going the extra mile to make sure she feels safe, she's able to get the food she needs, and she's not put in these sort of uncomfortable positions, right? He goes even further in verse 16, says, and also pull out some of the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. In other words, take some of the stuff we've already harvested and leave it for her to get, right? Give this to her. These actions went well beyond the letter of the Old Testament law, right? We read Leviticus 19. This is going above and beyond what even the law said he had to do. Ruth was not left just with the edges or the scraps, right? She was given much food. She was allowed to join the workers in the field. Boaz commanded his workers not to embarrass her, not to rebuke her. She was given plenty of food and made to feel safe and secure. Boaz here is demonstrating, again, just godly character. He goes above and beyond to provide for her, to protect her, and to make sure she feels safe in what had to be a very difficult environment. So how do the godly people act in these verses? We've seen already, Ruth, she works very hard. She demonstrates care and loyalty and devotion to God. She cares for those around her. Her integrity, her hard work, these things are evident to all. We see Boaz using his wealth, his food, his standing, not for his own gain, but to provide for Ruth, to make sure she not only is provided for, but that she's protected and secure. These are virtues and actions that are still desperately needed today. Integrity, generosity, providing for one another and protecting one another, especially the most vulnerable. Brothers and sisters, when people think of us, do they think of our godly character? These verses remind us, all that we've read so far, remind us that God's heart is for the poor, the orphan, and the widow. These first two points we've talked about, God's provision and the character of Ruth and Boaz, they work together, right? God providing for those in need and the virtues of God's people. God cares for those who are in need. Do we? Do we reflect the character of God by caring for those in need? Boaz, again, he had nothing to gain from helping Ruth. So when we see people in need and it doesn't help us to help them, do we still do it? Do we provide for them? Do we make sure that they feel protected and taken care of, that they're not embarrassed or reproached? Let us be those who reflect the character of our God, who have hearts to care for the most vulnerable, who have the character exemplified here in the actions of Boaz and Ruth. Let's read on to the final verses, 17 through 23. It says, "So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah of barley. And she took it up and went into the city. Her mother-in-law saw what she had gleaned. She also brought out and gave her what food she had left over after being satisfied. And her mother-in-law said to her, 'Where did you glean today, and where have you worked? Blessed be the man who took notice of you.' So she told her mother-in-law with whom she had worked and said, 'The man's name with whom I work today is Boaz.' And Naomi said to her daughter-in-law, 'May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead.' Naomi said to her, 'The man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers.' And Ruth the Moabite said, 'Besides, he said to me, you shall keep close to my young men until they have finished all my harvest.' And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, 'It is good, my daughter, that you got to go out with his young women, lest in another field you be assaulted.' So she kept close to the young men of Boaz, gleaning until the end of the barley and wheat harvests, and she lived with her mother-in-law." So we see here that our God is a redeeming God. These final verses really set up the last two chapters. To this point, the focus has been really on the short-term provision for Ruth and Naomi. But in these final verses, we begin to get a sneak peek at God's plan for the long-term provision for their family. Verse 17 starts by telling us that she gleaned until evening. Remember, she started in the early morning and had been working with just a short rest. She obviously took a break at mealtime, but went right through the evening until she beat out what she had gleaned. So she'd worked very, very hard, and she ended up with an ephah of barley. And how much that is, commentaries differ all over the place. It seems like it's somewhere between 30 to 50 pounds worth of grain, anywhere from 1 to 3 weeks worth of food. And this is just on one day. So Ruth works a whole day, a short rest, and then she carries 30 to 50 pounds back. This woman is no joke. This is pretty serious. So in verse 18, she goes home and shows it to Naomi, and she gives Naomi her leftover lunch, right? What she had left over after being satisfied. And so I find verse 19, like, kind of hilarious, right? Naomi just can't get these questions out fast enough. Reminds me of like when I was a teenager and I came home and my mom was mad or something, and just the questions, right? She says, "Where did you work? Where were you? What did you do?" Right? "Where were you and where have you worked?" But she says, "Blessed be the man who took notice of you," right? She sees what Ruth has brought home, and she realizes immediately, this isn't the food that you get when you just go out and glean, right? The food that Ruth brought back is a lot more than anyone, any sort of orphan or widow or someone who's just out gleaning on the edges of the field. It's a lot more than they could bring back. Naomi recognizes that this is a lot of food. This couldn't have come from just her. Someone clearly took notice of her. So Ruth tells her about Boaz, and Naomi responds in verse 20 by pronouncing a blessing on him. He's not forsaken the living or the dead. In other words, he's of our clan, and he's not forsaken the living, Naomi and Ruth, or the dead, Elimelech, Mahlon, and Chilion. The idea is, like, not to be morbid, but if I were to die and you all cared about me, one way you could show that, not forsaking the dead, would be to make sure my wife and children are fed and, you know, kept alive and so forth. That's the idea, right? Boaz has not forsaken the living, or he's shown his care for his kinsmen who have passed away by caring for those in their family. The word kindness in verse 20 is the word for covenant faithfulness and love. It's a word that is almost always attributed to God as the one who has covenant faithfulness and love. And here it's attributed, commentators differ on if it's talking about God's kindness through Boaz or kindness of Boaz. Really, either way, it's God working through him in covenant faithfulness to his people. But then Naomi says something interesting, something which, don't worry, we're not going to take all the time to unpack it today. I know we're getting to the end. We'll talk about it more the next 2 weeks. But she says, he's a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. What is a redeemer? Well, stay tuned. We'll get to that in a minute. And she kind of moves on, and Ruth says she'll be staying close with Boaz's workers till the end of the harvest. And Naomi approves, knowing that if she were in another field, she might be assaulted. Right? Boaz's order that no one touch her, Boaz's protection, these are all a huge relief to Naomi. I mean, I made the joke a minute ago about my mom when I was a teenager and whatever, but one can only imagine that Naomi probably was worried about Ruth. This widow has come with her to a foreign land and is out in this world by herself. So she's thankful that Ruth has found a place where she is safe and protected. Now, had we not read this mention of a redeemer in verse 20, the story could conceivably end here at the end of verse 23. Ruth and Naomi, they've made it back. They're in Bethlehem. They're in Israel. They have Ruth has found a field where she's safe and she can stay till harvest. If her day one haul of food is any indication, they were going to be set for the winter, right? God has provided for them in the midst of tragedy. We talked about all this death, and now they're in a new place where they will have food. Their short-term needs have been met. But this mention of a redeemer indicates that there may be more. What was a redeemer? We'll explore this topic much more over the next 2 weeks, but the short version is that in the Old Testament law, if a man dies and one of his unmarried male relatives, if he dies without children, is required then to basically conceive a child on his behalf, so the family line, the family property, and the family sort of sustenance, all of that goes through that child. The family line is not over. The property, the food, all that belongs to the family stays with the family. So if the family is to continue, an eligible bachelor from that clan would have to marry the widow. And Naomi realizes Boaz is just one such eligible bachelor. So in one sense, chapter 2 ends with Naomi and Ruth's short-term needs met. God has provided food abundantly. God has not forgotten them. And we now see in this mention of a redeemer that God is also working to provide for their long-term need. Offspring, a family. Being redeemed would bring more than just more kids or something. It would also bring long-term security and provision. Our God is a redeeming God, and we see him taking a situation that looked as bleak as it could possibly be and redeeming it for his glory. At the beginning of chapter 1, things looked awful, and slowly but surely, we're seeing God take that and redeem it and bring about amazing blessing. How beautiful. As we close, I just want to summarize these points. First and foremost, we see here God providing for his people, even in the darkest times. The book is about the work of God keeping a faithful remnant to himself in the midst of wickedness. And today we saw how God provides for his people. He provides for those in need. We, brothers and sisters, can love and we can serve the poor because this aligns with the heart of God. And also we can be assured that our God will provide for us. We can be generous and giving and loving to those in need because we know that our God will take care of us. We don't need to hold it all with a firm hand, worried what will happen, but we can live humbly, like Ruth, taking refuge under God's wings. We also saw that Ruth and Boaz are godly people. In each of them, we see amazing virtues and attributes. The author is doing something important here, right? In the midst of the days of the judges, we get to see ordinary people honoring God with their lives. And in the next chapter, we're going to see a story that is, at first glance, almost scandalous, right? And I think chapter 2 intentionally prepares us for that by showing us that these people are truly devoted to God. Ruth is devoted to God, the covenant God of Israel. She's hardworking. She's loyal. She wants to provide for herself and Naomi. She's doing all she can to honor God in this hard situation. Likewise, Boaz not only allows Ruth and others to glean, but he provides for her abundantly when it was not bring him any advantage, right? He makes specific plans to protect her, to give her more than she needed, and to elevate her status, to let him eat with her at the mealtime. These are godly people, but as we read the story, let's keep the big picture in mind, right? God is at work. Last week, we said God is at work in the darkest times, and today we see that firsthand. We see these examples, but I don't want you to just look at these examples and say, okay, well, you know, I'll try to be more like Ruth or more like Boaz. If you want to look more like Ruth, look to the God Ruth looked to. Man, if you want to look more like Boaz, look to the God Boaz worshipped. Let us be characterized as those who take refuge under the wings of God. Again, this story, this book points us to Jesus. We'll see at the end the way this points to the line of David, which points to Jesus. We saw that some last week. But even just in the way we see God providing, we see God providing for those who are poor and destitute. And he still does that today. He provides for those of us who are poor and destitute spiritually by sending Jesus Christ to die for our sins. When we couldn't do anything for ourselves, when we were in desperate need of a Savior, God made provision by sending Jesus Christ to pay a penalty that we couldn't pay. We had no other way. We were lost in sin. And so today, if you have never put your faith in Jesus Christ, I invite you to do so. I invite you to talk to Graham or myself or any of the members here who would be glad to talk to you. And church, let us look to Jesus. Let us long to love our neighbor, to trust our God who is a providing God. Trust that he will bless our efforts. Trust that he will honor us, his word and his character. Pray that we would look to him and have his heart for the poor and the needy. And let's pray.
Thank you for listening to the sermon from Renaissance Church. If you have any questions about the sermon or would like to know more, please feel free to contact us by email at renaissance.mtl@gmail.com or reach out to us on social media. It's our passion to love Jesus, love each other, and love our world.